Hello and welcome to another episode of In Conversation With by Kangaroo Minds. I am Vedika and today we have with us Sharanjeet Singh. Sharanjeet is the founder and director of Therapy, a movement which aims to reshape the narratives and conversations around mental health in the Punjabi community. Therapy started with Sharanjeet's own lived experiences with mental health. And today he and his team strive to spread mental health awareness, education, provide support and research. Our conversation today with Sharanjeet will center around how we can make our own communities more mental health friendly and what communities can do to better support mental health. However, before we begin, we would like to put out a trigger warning for our audience. If at any point during this conversation, should you find yourself feeling distressed, stressed out, or triggered, please take a step back to look after yourself. You can also find an additional list of support services and resources on our website. Now, without taking up much time, let's dive in to hear more from Sharanjeet. So welcome to the conversation today, and it's great to have you with us, Sharanjeet. And we're looking forward to hearing more from you and your insights, your experiences.
No, thank you so much, Vedika. Thank you for having me in the conversation today. I'm really looking forward to speaking about the work that we've been doing and thinking about its significance, especially in our world today.
Absolutely. So without much more ado, let's dive in. What has been the story of Therapy? Like, how did, you know, that come about?
So even though Therapy officially started in October 2017, the story or the experiences that went into Therapy started a few years before that. So for me, my main challenge was when I was transitioning from home to university for my undergraduate degree. And, you know, that's a very difficult transition generally in life for those who go through it. But for me, it was particularly difficult going to a new city, making new friends in that new city, you know, looking after myself, living independently, and juggling the different kinds of pressures and different roles that I was playing in my life at that time. And so this was back in 2014, and I was moving into a place with different culture, different communities, and a different sense of life compared to what I was used to. And I noticed that I was someone who stuck out the crowd a lot when I was here there at university. I was someone who stuck out and someone who was visually quite different from a lot of the other people around me. And so this meant that, you know, I felt it was a bit harder to kind of make friends and get to know people. I felt that I was singled out sometimes because of how I looked and because of how I presented myself. And over time, this led to different kinds of challenges, different kinds of difficulties in university, which led to me isolating myself, led to me spending less and less time with others around me, led to me having, you know, really, really difficult challenges with kind of overthinking and challenges related to anxiety, you know, body image related challenges and things that were all kind of joined together, which made my life a lot harder at that point. And it made it very difficult for me to live my life how I wanted to. And just a little bit, a little thing I remember was, I remember we were at an event. It was an event for students and I wanted to go in and speak to everyone in the event. I went in, I gave people food, I was serving drinks, you know, we had tea, we had samosas, and people were getting along, people were chatting with each other, but I couldn't chat with anyone. There was something inside of me that was like, oh, okay, you know, maybe don't do that, maybe don't speak with these people, you know, are people judging me in this way, are they looking at me in a certain way? And I remember that time, and I remember that event, and I remember thinking, I want to speak to people, but there's something that's stopping me from doing that. And maybe this is something that I need to get help for. This is something I need to seek support for. And it was actually after that, I went and spoke to my housemates, the people I was living with, and we were able to create that space to talk to each other about different challenges. And when I went back home and looked at my communities I was growing up with, there were other people who were going through different challenges, but they didn't have access to the support like I did. And so that's what eventually led to the creation of Therapy in October 2017. When we noticed that there are people going through different kinds of challenges, there are certain kinds of supports, but not everyone has the access between themselves and the supports that are available. And so we wanted to focus on Punjabi communities and think about how we could strengthen our approaches to mental health.
I mean, the fact that, you know, your story came from your lived experiences and what you went through, how important do you feel that it is to have, you know, community-specific supports available?
So I think there is a lot of merit to having conversations that are very general. I think it's an important starting point because it sets the ground for the different types of topics that we're going to be discussing in our society more widely. But as we know, there isn't really a one policy or one conversation fits all approach to working in societies that have huge amounts of diversity, huge amounts of experiences, and really, really complex layers of identities which can shape people's lives. And so for me, one example of this was we saw a lot of conversation around men's mental health happening in the UK. And I remember looking at the conversations and thinking, okay, you know, it's good, the conversation's starting. And, you know, there was a lot of discussion in the news, a lot of discussion in media. But I remember speaking to some relatives of mine who are men. And I said, oh, have you seen, you know, talking about mental health, you know, these celebrities, these public figures. And they'd kind of look at me and say, oh, egore de jija, which for those who don't speak Punjabi means, oh, it's a white person thing.
Yeah.
And when I heard that, I didn't blame them. I didn't blame them for thinking that. What I looked at were the people who were speaking about men's mental health in our media, in our popular culture. And really, there was no one who looked like them.
Yeah.
And so for me, that demonstrated the importance of thinking about identities and thinking about things at community level to supplement a lot of the work that's already happening and to really take forward some of these conversations, because we might have the intention of having a conversation aimed at everyone, but it's not always going to get through to everyone in that way. And so we need to be aware of our limitations. Because it's only together that we kind of learn off each other and we can do community-based work collectively. So yeah, I think that's the kind of importance in my mind.
I think, you know, you touched upon some important themes right there, you know, be it with regards to the stigma, like, you know, how this is like, you know, gore logon ki problem hai, or, you know, whether it's about how one size doesn't fit all, especially when you talk about mental health. So taking just some of those are themes, I think will come up through the rest of our conversation as well. But how important do you think, you know, that representation aspect is in that case, you know, that having someone who looks like you or, you know, you can identify with and having representative role models for mental health?
So for me, I think it's a really important part of the process. I think it's a part of the process that has been neglected. You know, as I mentioned before, there weren't a lot of men who looked like me, who looked like my relatives, who were speaking about mental health. And that was stopping the conversation from moving forward. It was stopping the information from getting to those who needed it. And if we look at what happens when we stop that conversation, it means that certain parts of society will start having that conversation. They will move forward and others will be left behind. And so for me, there are two important factors around representation. The first is, how do we get, as you mentioned, role models, people who look like others, to actually be having these conversations, to be taking forward these discussions, and to be breaking down those barriers? So how do we actually get people in those spaces to almost take that first step? And then the second question is, how do we make sure that identities and communities are represented in the work that is happening within the mental health landscape? So whether that means we have more, you know, say if it's more therapists from certain backgrounds, but it's also about having interventions that are community focused and community specific and built with communities themselves. So it's not just thinking about what do these people look like, but it's actually what are they doing as well? You know, are we represented in the workforce? We might have the workforce who look really diverse, but they could still be doing their work in a way which is not actually reflective of the communities they're serving. And so for me, representation has two faces. There's, you know, what do people look like and what are they doing? And then the other is, how are they actually working with and alongside these communities who've been pushed out historically?
I think that's a very interesting way to look at it. And, you know, also, what would you say, you know, in that case, that community spaces like Taraki, what role does that play in like the larger mental health ecosystem?
So the work we do through Taraki focuses on four areas, as you mentioned: awareness, education, social support, and research. What we're doing, a lot of what we're doing is focusing on the gaps that we recognize in our in the existing system. Focusing on those gaps to try and bring it to attention some of these conversations, some of these social supports, some of these research opportunities to our communities. Because historically, it's very hard sometimes to build trust between big institutions and communities who have, you know, maybe had bad experiences with these institutions, communities who, you know, have might have felt excluded from these institutions in different ways. And so with Taraki, we do a number of roles. We are a point of trust for our communities. We actually respond to their needs. We respond to what they want to see moving forwards. And when necessary, we help to link up big institutions and organizations with those who require support in our communities. But I guess one of the other important parts of our work is that we are trying to do a lot of preventative work where, you know, especially now, because of various kinds of challenges that people are experiencing, you know, mental health services are pushed to their limits. People are doing kind of crisis related work. There is very responsive and reactive work rather than a lot of preventative work. And so in our approach, what we're trying to do is really think closely about how we can build these foundations, how we can build these foundations so we are still doing, we still will have to do reactive work, but we're able to kind of make it less kind of less urgent reactive work. So we've got those structures in place.
So in that sense, like another thing which you said was that, you know, Taraki focuses a lot on research, which is, again, a gap which a lot of people don't talk about. Like, you know, typically when organizations look at the mental health space or they look at mental health advocacy, they will focus on one aspect, be it like awareness or, you know, providing support or just, you know, spreading knowledge. And I think where I see like a lot of things which even we do similar to Taraki is that even we have a focus on all three elements. But coming down to the research bit, how do you feel that, you know, having that community-specific research, what role does that play in like getting people to have their mental health understood and helping them get the right kind of support that they need?
It's a fantastic question. And for me, it's one of the most important questions we can ask, because grassroots organizations can do absolutely fantastic work, but the way a lot of decisions are made in our society, a lot of them are looking at evidence bases. It's saying, okay, how are you measuring impact? How are you evaluating the work that you're doing? And so for us, from an early point, the emphasis on research has been there because we want to be able to create a community-informed evidence base.
Right.
We've noticed that there are huge gaps in literature, huge gaps about Punjabi communities and mental health, mental well-being. And we've recognized that we're in a great position to start speaking to those gaps. And so one example is our COVID research. We did some research on COVID-19 and Punjabi communities and mental health. And the reason we did this research was because we recognized that when we were talking about COVID-19, there was some discussion about minority communities, racialized communities, but it didn't go deep enough. And when we're thinking about our work, we wanted to really go a bit deeper to not only understand what the problems are, but to understand how people have been supporting themselves as well.
Right.
And so from that research, we were actually able to identify certain parts of Punjabi communities that were experiencing particular challenges. we identified that Punjabi LGBTQ plus communities were experiencing particular challenges, young people, so student age, and also kind of international students as well. And for us, the work didn't just stop there. The work didn't stop at the research. It's actually the work started after the research. Because after we'd asked these questions, we were actually able to develop programming that was responding to the different challenges outlined in the research. But when you're applying for grants, when you're trying to communicate your case, you're not just saying to someone, I've got a good idea that's come out of nowhere. You're saying, we've got an idea. This is the problem that we're trying to address. Here's the evidence of the problem we're trying to address. And so you're able to build a chain. You're almost able to build a chain of logic. And for us, that's so important. And we're very lucky to have the access to do these types of work. Not a lot of people have time to do that research type of work. But for me, it's so important to progress the work that we do as grassroots organizations.
I mean, I think the work that, you know, y'all have been doing, especially I've been seeing some of the things you did during the COVID with the support groups online and things, it's remarkable, because even to create those safe spaces for people, you know, where they feel that they can be vulnerable without feeling judged, and as well as belonging, right? Like having a sense of belonging, because again, everyone looks like you, you have like a common frame of reference to a large extent when you come into that space. But how do you also feel that, you know, as larger communities, that, you know, they can work towards helping and supporting community members who might be having an issue with their mental health?
Could you clarify that question a bit, please? What do we mean by that?
Like, as a community, like, let's say whether we talk about Punjabi, so like, let's remove, like, okay, Taraki is one organization in that space. But at a more individual level, or like at a family unit level, like, you know, how could they better support the members in their community who are having a hard time with their mental health? If that makes sense.
So this is, yeah, that does. Thank you for clarifying, Vedika. And so for me, it is thinking about how we can develop the skills and capacity of people in our spaces, so that they don't just limit their work to the space, but they actually go out and do this work with their families. And because the way that we see it, when we have our spaces, whether they're for Punjabi men, Punjabi women, Punjabi LGBTQ plus folks, Punjabi students, we're not just creating a space that can help people in that moment. We're trying to show that there's a different approach that can be taken. And people can go back and take this approach with their families, with their friends, with their communities. And so that's one way we try and actually spread the kind of approach that we take into different areas. But, you know, in the future, maybe it's worth us actually focusing on family related work, you know, focusing on building our skills, building our confidence within a kind of family setting. I know there's a fantastic organization called Desi Minds, who recently did a course, a mental health related course specifically developed for South Asian communities. And, you know, these were some of the topics that were coming into conversation there. And it's brilliant because, you know, we have some people doing the social support work. We have some people doing the education work. We have some people doing the awareness work. And really, this all speaks to each other. And it's all a part of an overall movement, and what we hope is an overall change.
You know, I mean, speaking about overall change, like, you know, how do you think that all the stakeholders in communities can sort of at least come together to normalize conversations around mental health and to sort of break that culture of silence, if you would say, you know, when it comes to mental health?
You know, Vedika, one of the hardest things to do is to take steps forward together alongside different organizations in this work. Because we know, you know, we're doing this work, I do Taraki work voluntarily, we're doing this work with our other roles, with our other parts of our lives. And sometimes it can be so energy consuming, just focusing on what we're doing, looking and making sure that we have everything in place that comes next. And it can become really hard to actually look around and look at those other people who are doing that work. And so it's so important that we have those types of relationships and that type of engagement with other organizations in the space, because it's only together that you can do larger campaigns, you can spark larger conversations, you can think about what's going to be coming next, coming through to the next year, and you can plan together. And this is one thing that I'm trying to think about how we do this, but it's trying to bring together the different organizations, the different stakeholders around Punjabi mental health, and say to, you know, let everyone meet each other, let everyone get to know each other, and we can all think together what are our aims for the next year. But that's something that needs to happen. It's something that is always at the top of my agenda. But again, when we're doing this work and we have so little time, it can quickly just fall off.
Speaking of that, you know, I mean, how do you encourage community members to have those conversations about mental health, especially when, like, another thing is stigma as well, right? So how do you balance, like, okay, now we need to fight the stigma, but we also need to spread the awareness. So how do you start that conversation?
So one of the things that have been really important for us, there are two things. The first is our testimonials. We did a Punjabi men's mental health project where we have testimonials from over 85 Punjabi men about their experiences of mental health challenges, their opinions on mental health. And that was a really important way of putting something on the table, starting a conversation, actually kind of, you know, just showing someone that something exists. And so I think things like that are really, that can be really powerful on social media. You know, even through conversations like this, having these discussions in an open and honest way is really, really powerful. And the second is actually going out and doing the community grassroots work in person, which has obviously been hard for the last couple of years. But going out and doing this in person, because in person is when you can make some of the biggest impact you can. And I remember I've worked with a couple of people. We've thought about mental health and faith, and we've been going to faith centers. So we've been to like kind of Gurdwara, kind of where Sikh people congregate. And that's been really, really powerful, because when we speak at those, at these faith centers, at these Gurdwara, you know, I speak from a lived experience perspective, and that will have an impact with some people in the audience. But my colleague, my friend, he will speak from a lived experience perspective and a faith perspective. So he'll be able to bring these conversations together. And then my other colleague will speak from a clinical perspective. And so, you know, people are having these conversations in English, in Punjabi, in different kind of ways of communicating to their audience. And at the end of that, 5% of the audience might listen to me. 50% of the audience might listen to my colleague. 30% of the audience might listen to my other colleague. It's about covering those bases. And so for us, when we're trying to spark these conversations and spark these, you know, spark the awareness, destigmatization, it's not just about having the conversation in one way. It's about having the conversation in multiple ways, so it gets through to different people in our communities.
I think that's a very interesting way of looking at it, you know, because each person is going to connect with something else, and there may be one thing which resonates with somebody, and, you know, like another aspect may resonate with someone else. So, you know, taking that whole thing forward, like, okay, you have the awareness, but how do you think we can move communities to go from, like, awareness to acceptance and finally action when it comes to mental health?
And, you know, this is one of the great questions, because a lot of work is focused on awareness. And for me, awareness is fantastic, but it's the first step.
Exactly.
It's the first step in a much longer process. And so this is why we actually started developing our education work, you know, going to students and working with them and doing workshops, providing different kinds of training, which make people not only aware of mental health, but more comfortable with having conversations, more confident with having conversations, and better skilled to actually take those conversations into practice. And so for me, it's recognizing that any awareness work needs to be followed up with education work, whether they are workshops, whether it's training, whether it's online resources, whether it's reading, podcasts, videos, all these different kinds of things. We need to really focus on how can we translate this awareness into something more. Because the way I say it to people is, I can be aware that a plane flies in the sky. I know that aeroplanes are there, but I can't tell you, that doesn't mean I can tell you anything about it. You know, if someone says to me, oh, have you seen these things flying in the sky? You know, they're aeroplanes. And then I know, okay, great. Yeah, they're aeroplanes. But if someone asks me, hey, do you know how that works? That's like, nope, no idea. But I know they're aeroplanes. And so for me, it's that question about how do we take the next step? How do we look at education? And then, as you mentioned, applying that education, the applying of the skills that we've learned. And so this is the whole logic behind a lot of our work. It's like we have the awareness stuff, we have the education stuff, we have the social support stuff. And in theory, you know, you could go from one to the other. And there's a train there, there's a process. So yeah, it's almost like when we're thinking about one thing, we have to be thinking about four or five little things and how they connect in this conversation around mental health.
I think that's how it should actually be, right? Because a lot of people, as you said, focus on awareness, but then we forget about the long-term story when it comes to the whole mental health conversation. And to make a change, I think you really need to make that entire transition. So just one more thing around like communities, sometimes is you would encounter, especially in like community specific support, is stigma. Like, you know, there would be very specific stereotypes sometimes, or, you know, just notions that communities themselves have. So is there something like that, you know, which you've encountered, and how do you think you can combat that? Because sometimes it can be such a big barrier, not just to have a conversation, but also to help seeking.
For me, you know, when I talk about stigma, it's really important that for me, I focus on the stigma that exists within communities, and also the stigma that exists within healthcare services. You know, healthcare services can make people feel excluded. They can make people feel pushed away, just as much as community-based stigma can make people feel excluded and pushed away. But I guess for me, some of the biggest bits of stigma that have come up in Punjabi communities, particularly around Punjabi men, is, you know, the linking between mental health discussion, vulnerability, and perceived weakness. And all of this plays into very gendered understandings of what it means to be a man within Punjabi communities. And oftentimes this can lead to conversations being pushed away about mental health. It can lead to conversations being laughed at, conversations being neglected. And ultimately this has no positive impact on people, because if someone's experiencing difficulties, if they're going through challenges, it's going to take them longer and longer to recognize that. It can take them longer and longer to reach out for support, if they do at all. And we see difficulties, like in the UK at the moment, suicide is the second largest killer of men, and, you know, the largest killer of men between 25 and 49, I think. And so with our work specifically focusing on Punjabi men, we do group-based work because it shows a possibility to do things differently. It shows that things can be done differently. It shows that we can have conversations about things that make us angry, things that make us upset, things that make us, you know, feel low, feel really, really nervous, feel anxious, and ultimately feel a bit vulnerable. And that's okay, because in reality, vulnerability is a strength. It's a sign of strength rather than a signal of weakness. And so one of the things is just being very, very kind of specific with which kind of stigmas we're looking to understand. When you're trying to understand them, you're able to actually look at what goes into them. It's almost like stigma has an ingredients, like there are different ingredients that go into it. And then you're able to unpick that and you're able to offer an alternative. And this, I feel, is one of the benefits of doing things at a very, very specific community level, is that you're able to understand things at such a close level that you're able to potentially offer solutions that are effective and impactful for those communities.
I think, you know, as you said, thing with stigma, which we don't realize, is that yes, you know, you have the larger overarching stigma about mental health, that, you know, it makes you weak or any of that. But then you come down to community specific, you know, stigma, which you'll find that they are interrelated, but at least you can start tackling it at a very micro level. So, you know, right now, like, I think there's a lot of talk going on around this idea of the new normal. So what if you had to, you know, reimagine the new normal, what is something you want to see in that?
For me, I want to see community-based mental health care, which is considered at the same level as clinical care. When we're talking about clinical interventions, we're also thinking about community-based interventions. And when we're thinking about these interventions, we're not looking at communities and saying, this will be good, this will be good, this will be good. We're actually working alongside these communities who have established relationships and established representatives who can actually outline which things are needed, which things will be beneficial. And so for me, whether it's Punjabi communities, Afro-Caribbean communities, you know, whatever, we actually need a system which allows for nuance, but then also helps the conversations to happen more widely. And so even though I'm working with Punjabi communities, it should be a lot easier for me to engage with people doing work in other communities, to learn from each other, to develop our experiences. And then it should be easy for us to work with those who are actually in policy and those who are actually delivering and developing healthcare interventions, mental health interventions, because we're the ones who has the finger on the pulse or an understanding of the communities we work with. And so we need to actually ensure those insights and that knowledge is taken into the development of services, the development of community-specific services for different challenges and different problems. And so for me, there's a system I often see in my head, and it's something that I need to get onto paper one day. It's a system where the mental health infrastructure and the hierarchy of mental health landscape is flattened. It's one where people speak to each other. It's one where people learn off each other. It's one where community-based organizations can do research, can lead research, can collaborate on research. And that research is then put into practice and directly implemented within those contexts. And then it kind of feedback, you know, the community-based organizations can understand, is it working? Are these things going well? And if not, you know, you can work with the communities, work with healthcare infrastructure, work with mental health services to make things better. But that's a future that I don't know if will come today, tomorrow, next year, in my lifetime. But it's one we can hope for.
No, absolutely. I think that's a very beautiful vision for the future. And, you know, just having people working together, learning off each other can be very, very empowering, especially in that space of mental health. So what would be, Sharanjit, your parting words to anyone who's watching this today or listening to this, who's having a hard time with their mental health?
I think for me, it is important to say that even though we might feel, you know, completely alone in the different challenges that we're experiencing, that we might feel that, you know, the mental health awareness work doesn't really speak to us. But there are always people out there, there are always supports out there for us to access. And support looks different for different people. I might enjoy speaking to friends and family. Other people might enjoy, you know, doing art-related work. Other people might enjoy making music. They might enjoy going for walks, doing physical activities. So for you, just think about the things that help you take the next step. The things you already do, which are things that make you feel cherished, things that make you feel relaxed, things that make you feel comfortable, and just continue to embrace those things.
That's lovely, and I think it's been a very, very enriching session. Thank you so much, Ranjit, for taking our time, for joining us and sharing your experiences and your learnings along the way with Taraki, with all our viewers. And lastly, for anyone who's watching this, you know, if you at any point of time are having a hard time with your mental health, just know that it gets better. Mental health can often make you feel like you're really alone and that you're the only one going through it. But that is really not the case. You're not alone, and there is help out there. There is support available out there, and it will get better. So on that note, till next time, please stay well and stay healthy. Thank you.